Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio and a brand new month. Each month, we discuss and explore a topic that is related to principles, universal principles, and we are approaching these as tools that we can learn to lead a more purposeful life and to sort of understand the world around us a bit better, navigate through it, and generate some goodwill. So we have covered many interesting topics so far this season. We've covered interconnectedness, participation, non-linearity, very interesting subjects, and they got more complex as we went along. Non-linearity was very interesting, and we are headed toward another very interesting month that we're sure you'll enjoy, and that is duality, the myth of duality. So this concept of duality, it seems to define our day-to-day existence. Like we think of this or that or us or them, over, under, stop, go, rich, poor, black, white, yes, no. It goes on and on and on. And certainly this way of approaching the world lends itself to this sort of concept of our innate freedom of choice, which we discussed in terms of creating your own reality, in terms of participation. But as we moved into non-linearity, we realized that the world is very complex. It can't be limited in a way to this or that. And so dualistic approach really doesn't work. The world indeed is more complex. So I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy. There are two of us.
Hi, Steve. Yes, there are two. Actually, Steve, there are more than two of us. There's everybody who's joining us is listening.
Yay! See, there's going to be a theme, Dorothy, right? So, listeners, I just want to say, kick off this month, because I think this is a very important month. And just to say, Dorothy, if I may mention that Dorothy has written a triptych of books called Enough for Us All. And the very the third volume is called Moving Beyond Duality. So it's right there in the title. And really, it all comes down to that. It comes down to understanding that the world is abundant and we cannot reduce the world, but it's better if we expand upon the world. And so we are blessed to really have a really quite wonderful, expert authority or someone who has pondered and really processed this concept of duality. So Dorothy, I will just appreciate as we move through this month, your thoughts and reflections on this topic.
Well, I'm really delighted to be with you, Steve, and with all of our listeners. And I think that one of the reasons that this month on non-duality is going to be, could be challenging is a couple of reasons. One of them is, you know, as you alluded to, Steve, we have many habits of dualistic speech. And dualistic thinking, it's very familiar to us. It's reinforced, all the time in our media, especially by the current political environment in the United States, the contrasts that are drawn, the sharp lines between different positions. But the other reason you know, which I think you and I have already grappled with some, is that if we are truly to embrace that first principle, that we are all interconnected, we are not separate entities that can be counted, you know, separately. And if we truly embrace the idea that, you know, we are all part of a one life, that there's not an us group and a them group, then we have to come face to face with the consequences of those dualistic habits. And the most painful to me of the consequences is that us-them thinking, as we have seen played out so dramatically in our current events, lays the groundwork for violence. And so if we're going to sensitize ourselves so that we do not think dualistically, we do not behave dualistically, that we really embrace the fact that our universe is probabilistic, not cause and effect, then we have to also take a hard look at all of the different ways in which we perpetuate harm and violence towards each other and ourselves.
Absolutely. And it comes down to choices, right? Being able to observe the choices we make in relation, mm-hmm. way of thinking and into our way of acting and to the impact that has on the world.
Yeah. And seeing a wider array of choices, right?
Yeah.
Not just two choices, but a wider array. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a couple of quotes.
Wonderful.
The first is from Stephen Sondheim. People may already know this one. He writes, "Must it all be either less or more, either plain or grand? Is it always or? Is it never and?" And that gets us back. We talked some time ago about the difference between speaking and thinking in either or in both and you know, the profound difference between those.
Yes.
And then the other is from the Dalai Lama. He writes, "Non-duality does not mean a homogeneity of experience, only that what is seen is not separate." And I think that really captures what we're going to be wrestling with this month, that we're not all the same. You know, we are distinct and unique in our experiences, and yet we are not separate.
And
so those are my contributions, Steve.
And well, that word, you know, homogeneity, to talk about that everything is the same. And so I think for people and for listeners who might hear this word non-duality and just scratch their head, what on earth could that mean? You know, for someone who has never heard that word or processed that word, I appreciate, and I know we're going to even get into this idea of non, right? Of something not being dual. And to look at that word that's in there, which is dual, mm-hmm. you know, I challenge you to a duel, right? Which says, here we are in a versus situation, so that it is non-dualistic, that there is mm-hmm. more than this idea even of dueling, right, Dorothy?
Right.
But it's also that it's not saying, I like that it says that it does not mean, if we say that it's non-dualistic, meaning this or that, it doesn't mean it's the same, because mm-hmm. we've said time and time again that everything is energy, but there mm-hmm. are still qualities of energy. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it can be searching for the qualities as mm-hmm. opposed to wanting to pit or to pigeonhole or to separate and box in. But it's a process of looking for qualities is a good way of, I think, a sense of looking at it as well, that we will see throughout.
Or another way we can think of it is, you know, in order to organize our experience, in order to organize the stimuli that come in order to understand what's happening, we create categories. And it's one of the first things that we teach children. If you watch how children learn language. You know, we teach them colors, we teach them certain kinds of objects, that kind of thing. The difficulty comes in when we forget that we are the ones that are defining and creating the categories, and we are the ones that limit them to two. That
right.
There are always different ways of categorizing things. And so if we, you know, for example, if we say black versus white, well, those are two categories that we might create. They don't work very well because there are many, many other shades in between completely black and completely white.
And if you think about it in realistic, actually, if you approach it with truth, let's put it that way. One of my best friends, John, is a person of color, as we would say. And to mm-hmm. think of that even, am I not a person of color? I have a color. And mm-hmm. he would be referred to as black. And I would be referred to as white. Yet if you put our arms together, our arms are much more similar in shade than if you were to put a white piece of paper beside me and a black piece of paper beside him. We're so much more similar to each other than to call me white and to call him black. And so the very fact that we say something like that, Steve is the white guy and John is the black guy, is actually an untruth in every mm-hmm. regard.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, we're getting back to the concepts of complexity and continuum. And I just want to put in, though, for our listeners, is there's a reason why this idea of having two categories feels so familiar, because we exercise this dichotomous choice almost every second of our lives. Because we're bombarded by hundreds and thousands of stimuli. We can't possibly attend to all of them. And so we do two very quick decision trees, if you will. The first is, do we need to pay attention to it at all? And if the answer to that is no, then we have what we call inattentional blindness, which is we simply, you know, if you ask somebody about things that are in the room that they haven't even paid attention to because they were so focused on a particular interaction, they literally didn't see that at all. Or if we say yes to that, then our attention is captured. So that's the first split, so to speak. And then we say to ourselves, okay, if I need to pay attention to it, do I need to pay attention to it now? And if the answer is yes, then it goes into our working memory. And if our answer is no, it goes into our long-term memory. Now, here's where one of the first challenges comes, Steve, because our working memory is an environment of mindfulness, you know, where we're looking at something, we're thinking about something. But that long-term memory is a kind of a mindless absorption. So we take in things uncritically. You know, we don't examine them. We don't question them. We just absorb them. And that's why you can have things happen. Like I remember a young girl that I lived with and co-parented. And she was very athletic from a very early age. And she went to kindergarten and came back from kindergarten and announced that boys run faster than girls.
Yeah.
And I said, really? I said, what about your friend John? Do you run faster than him? Oh, yeah. She says, I'm the fastest in the class. I said, oh, and you're a girl. She said, yeah, but boys run faster than girls. So that's that kind of mindless absorption. You know, we take in things from our environment. And unless we pay attention, then we're influenced by all of these stereotypes and prejudices and distortions that we absorb.
Well, I appreciate, first of all, I love that you just said the word distortions, because that's such a key word that we bring up quite often, right, Dorothy? And we're, you know, and that this is an illusion, which is a distorted thought form. But I also appreciate that you brought up the biology and our brains, which has to do as well with becoming more than our brains, becoming more than our biology, which is really, again, becoming expansive and moving toward being more than of the one life and not just this brain. So it becomes about knowing our brain, knowing its functions, and in some ways, moving beyond those functions or taking them to a place where we might not readily go with them. But we're at our first break, but biology is interesting to me in this, and I'd love to just ask you a question as soon as we get back. Listeners, love where this is going. I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be back after these messages.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. And this is a tip with purpose. Be willing to make a change for the good. If you want to know what your thoughts were like in the past, look at your body today. If you want to know what your body will be like in the future, look at your thoughts today. This was Deepak Chopra who said that. And it's true. But it's never, ever too late to make a change. And many things can be reversed. If you put your mind into it and make an effort, now you can make the change and tomorrow you will feel much better. Start now and look forward. Past is the past. There's no future in it. But in the now, you can find the future for tomorrow. I hope this tip helps you. You can reach me at SwissHypnotherapy.com.
Hello, welcome back, listeners. Dorothy and I are so pleased you are with us for this month-long topic of duality.
Non-duality.
Well, right, I was going to say. See, it is so good. I love it. this month-long theme of non-duality. Dorothy, before we continue the conversation, let's tell our listeners a bit about our affiliated organizations. Would you like to start?
Sure. So, listeners, I'm with the School for Esoteric Studies, and we provide discipleship training for persons who have a spiritual practice and want to deepen it. We do that through meditation, study, and service. And we decided several years ago that we wanted to create purposeful collaborations with other like-minded organizations. And I'm absolutely delighted that this particular collaboration, Spirit Fire Radio, has worked out between our two organizations. You can find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. That's esotericstudies.net.
Wonderful. And I am here on behalf of Spirit Fire. We are also an educational nonprofit, and we are focused on generating spirituality in people's everyday lives. We do that through our own meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness. And we've got our own retreat center in Western Massachusetts where we hold living awareness retreats, meditation retreats, all kinds of retreats. And we've got online classes. You can find out more about the meditation practice and Spirit Fire at spiritfire.com. And also, listeners, if you'd like to listen to any archived shows, you can certainly find those on spiritfireradio.com or through Transformation Talk Radio. So, Dorothy, I just wanted to mention, I love that you talked about children and this, you know, I can just imagine where we point at a picture of a cat and we say, this is a cat. And if you were to say dog, they'd say, no, this is a cat, you know, instead of... Mm-hmm. There are so many kinds of cats. This is one version of a cat, right? Mm-hmm. It's like No, this is a cat. And we really do learn in that way. So it's often a process of learning and unlearning, I find, and then relearning and learning from a broader perspective. And it made me think about being a child and that we perceive ourselves, I would imagine, as being, you know, coming from our mothers and being at one, you know, as an infant. And we become independent in order, able to sort of take care of ourselves and learn about ourselves. Although I realize that that's a myth as well. I mean, we all need each other. We are interdependent. But our perception is that we move off to learn about ourselves. We become independent in a way as a person. We explore our uniqueness. And so we run into the risk of stopping there, right, with this idea of myself as being sort of solely subjective, you know, that I'm the centerpiece of it all. It all revolves around me. You think of the terrible twos. We learn to say no, you know, we learn to make it all about us. And then our spiritual connection or our spiritual evolution is really about moving toward connection, toward inner connection of realizing the fact, and I love that word realizing, meaning like making it real, the fact that we're part of something greater. So it's this overdeveloping a sense of individual identity. It's that can lead to a sense of separation from others if we don't evolve, you know, if we don't ever get to that point of realizing, you know, it really is, I am a part of this greater family. We are interdependent. We are interconnected. And I see myself in others. All of these namaste, these spiritual concepts, it seems to me in our biology, we move in toward independence. And then we've got to come back around to interdependence. And so that could be a bit of where we get lost.
Well, I think, and, you know, and if we look at the whole myth of reality, the myth of reality, there's that too. But the myth of duality, the challenge is that we forget about that relationship, right? We look just at the parts and not at the whole. We forget about the continuum. And one of the things that I've done, Steve, you mentioned my book, Moving Beyond Duality. While I was doing the research for that, one of the things that I asked a wide range of people was to give me an example of something where there were only two options. Now, if you limit this in time, for example, I live someplace where I need to take a ferry from the mainland. So you could say the ferry leaves, I'm either on it or I'm not on it. But in a broader context, right, I could be on it and I could be at the very last car. It's going to take me a long time to get off. I could be waiting for the ferry and be the first to get on, or I could be way back. But when I asked people to give me examples that were not time constrained, right, people found it very difficult. The one that they kept coming back to was gender. They'd say, well, there's only two genders, male and female.
Right.
But in fact, we've had research for a long time that there's intersex. And the whole issue of trans has to do with the malleability of how you feel about yourself and your identity and your physical body. And so it's really not a clear-cut kind of thing. So the position that I'm willing to try to defend is there actually is nothing that is dualistic in the sense of having only two discrete options. Now, what there is are dichotomies. And you can say, so for example, if I say night and day, night versus day, the dichotomy really is night versus not night, which would include dusk, dawn, you know, the whole continuum. And dichotomies can be very useful if we remember to make sure that the second part of the dichotomy is actually completely inclusive. And I think that's part of what you were getting at when you were talking about the black-white distinction.
Right. Well, I found it interesting that also that we're using the word non-duality, as I mentioned before. And I asked him, you know, can you give me an antonym to duality? Meaning, mm-hmm. give me the opposite, right? I was mm-hmm. asking him to do, in a sense, what, and he sort of struggled. He said, collaboration. And then he said, all.
Right. You know,
he basically just went so big that was like everything, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is very interesting. I think of my nephew at when Caitlyn Jenner announced that she was identified as a woman. My young nephew, we were all together in South Carolina when that news broke, and everybody was seeing the pictures of what was once Bruce Jenner and now Caitlyn Jenner, and really processing it. And he's like, ah, yeah, that's great. He said, you know, that's going to be the topic of my generation, is, are we really our bodies? And I thought, that's so progressive. He's 14 mm-hmm. years old. He could have cared less. He said, oh, yeah, well, are we really? What's our body? What is our body anyway? That's not really who we are. So that's wonderful. That's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, Dorothy, there is a fascinating story on NBC News about parents raising what they're called babies, where they're letting children decide their own gender. They don't want to be pigeonholed into these dualistic gender stereotypes. And I bring it up because mm-hmm. you mentioned that most people will go to male and female, but they see it as fluid. And, you know, mm-hmm. I have a quote from them. These parents, they're Julia and Nate Sharp, and they say, for us, it means raising our kids with gender neutral pronouns. So they, them, their, rather than assigning he, she, him, her from birth based on their anatomy. And you look at a picture of these kids and they're amazing. And the only difference between them, their fraternal twins, is like basically one's got brown hair, one's got blonde hair. And they didn't even, when she delivered the babies, Julia did not want to know, the parents didn't want to know the sex of their twins straight away. And they actually held their babies, spent time with their babies in gender neutrality. And so, mm-hmm. you know, they want people to see them as kids rather than mm-hmm. boys and girls, because they don't want to limit their, you know, the way that they will evolve as human beings. And then NBC News at one point, I think this is beautiful, asked them, you know, what about bullying? Do you think they're going to be bullied for different, because as being different? And they said, I'd rather have a kid that experiences adversity and deals with it and comes out stronger than a kid who is a bully.
Mm-hmm.
So,
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good. And I don't know about you, but in my work context, I'm getting an increasing number of emails from persons that I correspond with, you know, in a work context, where under their signature in the email, it will specify the pronouns that they use for themselves.
Ah, wonderful.
Which is another, you know, another approach to the same kind of thing. I think there's another, you know, you were talking about the becoming independent, you know, the separating from the mother. And let's just tackle this whole issue of, you know, kind of the boundaries of where one identity leaves off and another one starts. Because one of the things I was thinking about yesterday, I was sitting here looking out at the trees and thinking, you know, I see discrete trees. I see a maple tree, I see a walnut tree, and I see their leaves outlined against the sky. What I'm missing is I don't see the exchange of oxygen, carbon dioxide. I don't see the smell that they're giving off that allows them to communicate with other trees. In other words, I see them as separate and distinct because I don't have the physical ability to visualize the interconnection.
Right, right. Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's not there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, to go further, if you look at the root system of that tree in ways that it is connected to perhaps fungi, and that all trees are related and interconnecting throughout the whole forest. I mean, essentially, if you keep stepping back and looking at the interconnectedness, you realize it is, again, as we've always said, one huge dependent living organism that is Gaia, which we are a part of, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
We're at a break again, very quickly. So listeners, okay, stay with us. We're going to continue this conversation after these words.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I will spend this entire month talking about non-duality. So Dorothy, before the break, you were talking about looking out your window and seeing a tree. And what came to me is this idea of preference, that sometimes we'll look out the window and see a tree. Perhaps it's a birch tree, and we think, oh, I love birch trees. And then we look and we see perhaps a bittersweet vine that is wrapping around the base of the birch tree. And we go, oh, I can't stand bittersweet because it's going to snap the little sapling in half. And so emotions, right, of where we become attached to a preference, or we just become attached to an idea. And so it limits our ability to sit and just appreciate the fullness of it all, the interconnectedness of it all, because we want to respond to it. You know, we create these preferences. What do you think?
I agree. I think that there's another aspect of the emotional response that we perhaps overlook, and that is that emotional energy, mood, or chemical in the body is faster than thought. And so, you know, we have a habit of describing ourselves since Descartes as, you know, being rational beings, I think, therefore I am, kind of thing. But the reality is that we first have this flood of chemicals. We first have this emotional response that then drives what behavior occurs. Yeah. And we've talked about this before on the show. If we become aware of a certain pattern of thinking or a pattern of behavior that is not serving us well, that is harmful to ourselves or harmful to others, it's not going to just change on its own, because that emotional response will keep kicking in whenever we have to respond quickly, and we don't have time to just kind of pause ourselves. So to me, it's really critical that when we do have time, right, that we do take time to reprogram those reflexes so that when we respond in a way that we really want to. And I have a close friend. It's so fascinating to me that she and I have arrived at a different type of response in our lives to certain critical incidents. You know, when something happens, whether it's a car that comes out of nowhere or anything else that kind of drives us to an immediate response. Her immediate response is fear, right? She gets that fight flight kind of thing, and she either freezes up or she gets really aggressive and negative. And I have a completely different automatic response pattern now after, you know, working with myself, where my initial response is, what are the options?
Mm.
Which is an open feeling, right?
Yeah.
Whereas fight flight is a closed feeling. But that has happened for me only because of practice over time.
Sure. And you know, you said the word awareness, which of course set a flag off for me. And it really does come down to awareness. It comes down to generating awareness. It comes down to creating space in the mind so that we can observe. When we create space in the mind, we create space in the emotions, space in the emotions, space in the body. And, you know, science has proven that meditation quiets what's called the default mode network. It's so fascinating. You know, this default mode network is the area of the brain that wants to put things in boxes so we can respond very efficiently. Like that car coming at me, I gotta, you know, either scream at them or create havoc so that we swerve out of the way, or anything that we would like to put in a box so that we can respond efficiently, or what we perceive as efficient. But this default mode network, you know, it was developed to protect us in a sort of survival sense, you know, to think quick and get out of danger's way. But when that area of the brain is quieted and meditation quiets that area of the brain, it allows experiences to unfold without labeling, which is exactly what you're talking about, which is, what are my options here? Look at this. What could this mean? It allows us to be curious about an experience or explore an experience. So we sort of approach it without being critical straight away. And it makes me, I've been reading a lot of neuroscientists. It seems every spiritual guide or every spiritual writer is now writing with neuroscientists. I love this coming together of spirituality and science. But most neuroscientists will say that the brain is a prediction-making machine, that it takes as little sensory information as it needs to make an educated guess so that it can just perhaps too quickly form a perception about something out in the outside world. You know, it just jumps to conclusions right away. So we've got to find ways to undo that, that it is sometimes biological that we do that. We label, we jump to conclusions. So I would agree, create space. Meditation is a wonderful way to do that, right? And when you say work, I've worked on myself. So really, it is about being aware and seeing yourself from the point of the observer.
Yeah, and I just want to interject that we need to have reflexive ways of behaving, because there are times when we need to react very quickly. The thing is that we can we can program ourselves as to what that reflexive action is going to be. And,
right.
And that, to me, is really critical. The other, and I want to bring in another part of this, of what science is learning and making available to us. When I went, I'll confess, when I went through graduate school, the mind was talked about like a computer or like a huge filing cabinet, right? Things came in, memories came in, they got slotted. If you ever needed them again, you pulled them back out. Now, there may have been some schools that were more advanced than that, but that was the basic model. But that's not what happens at all. Various parts of a memory are stored in different places in the body, whether it's the smell, the visual, the oral, whatever it is. And then when we remember, we are literally putting the memory back together. What we often forget, or we may not even know, is that our brain tries to help us by simplifying things.
Yeah.
And so it will compress data. If there are several different memories or several different incidents that are fairly similar, it'll collapse them into one. And it will literally kind of snip off the bits that don't fit, right? So that you have a single whole that seems like that's the way things always are. But in fact, that's not the way things always were or are. So we, and again, this is something that can be helpful to us as long as we manage it and we're aware that this process can go on. This is part of why, the police, for example, try to get a witness to give evidence as soon as possible or to describe what happened as soon as possible, because as time goes on, that memory is going to be modified, even though the person thinks that they're telling absolutely the truth.
Yeah. And even as we tell it again to different people and we're in relation to them, as you tell the same story, it even changes, I think, a bit as well.
Absolutely, because we recall it with a different emotional overtone or whatever, and then that shapes what it is that that we remember. So that's one of the things that we need to be, really careful about. You mentioned the gendered language, which is, it really shapes the way in which we think and feel and behave. And then there's also this whole issue of kind of deifying competition, so there's always this comparison where somebody is a winner and somebody is a loser. And you can only feel good if you're the winner, if you're, quote, on top. And that, that has created lots of challenges. You were giving me some examples, Steve, of moving away from that model.
Yeah, well, and you just, Dorothy, just think for a moment. I mean, at least here in America, my goodness, talk about shaping children. Immediately when I was a kid, my brother and I had to go to the store and choose which football team jacket we wanted, because the football team jackets were so cool to have. And right away, you had to pick a team, And of course, I just picked by colors. But, you think of sports and sporting events and how much money is invested in stadiums and how much money we spend on salaries for coaches and professional athletes. And it really does come down to our obsession with winners and losers, who will be the winner and am I on the winning team? And that to me is really a big part of it as well, is this idea of wanting to belong, wanting to be on a winning team. And it forces us to sort of create an other. It's a very dangerous foray. And if you're not in that, if you're not in that culture, sports mentality and sports culture, you would never know that how just rampant it is and how many people really base so much of their day and of their conversation on this idea of their team and winning and losing and my team versus your team. It's amazing how much time we spend and how much it really does infiltrate our psyche. But yes, Dorothy, the Great British Bake Off. I did want to talk about that, but we're at a break. So maybe after we get back to the break,
okay.
Wonderful show. We'll be right back.
Powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Tune in to People Like Us Radio with Megan Lyons, transcending the trauma of the human experience. Megan will be raising the universal consciousness by empowering listeners with their own inner strength, working past trauma and abuse. Megan will show you how to find true healing and inner peace through the art and practice of self-love. Tune in every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. For more information about Megan and her work, visit enterthelightllc.com.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Would you like your next chapter to be free from fear and angst? Tune in to Your Next Chapter Radio, navigating through life's transitions with Shelley Ryan the fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shelley's contagious enthusiasm guides you through life's transitions deliberately, mindfully, and funnily. For Your Next Chapter coaching or to listen, visit YourNextChapterCoaching.com or call 602-617-8351. Next!
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. And just before the break, we were talking about competition. And we've talked about that, Dorothy, right? Quite a bit of this idea of co-creation or collaboration, cooperation versus there we go. But as choosing that over competition, there's a better way to say it. I'm learning. So I just before the break, I mentioned the Great British Bake Off, and listeners on the break, our lovely producer Carter was saying, I love that show, and you should have heard the joy and the fun in his voice. And I would say that is because this show, there's a wonderful show that you can find on Netflix or on PBS called The Great British Bake Off. It's been on for many seasons, and I am just personally obsessed with it. So they it's a different style of reality TV, and they've got all these bakers together. Everybody is baking. They'll give everyone a challenge, or they'll give them a recipe, or say, you know, bake a specific kind of pastry, and they all go to town. What's amazing is you start to learn about the individual by the way they approach it, and by the ingredients they choose. There's so many subtleties. You see how they work under pressure. But what's interesting about this show is it's all nice, soft colors. The lighting is beautiful. The music is very happy. It's almost a classical music, and everybody is really supporting each other. They'll ask each other to help them out. It really does not come down to I am in competition to you. And what else is interesting about it is you're not competing for like $1 million, that idea of like, I've got to get the money that forces you into competition. You know, in the end, everybody comes together. They all support each other. They're so beautifully creative together, and they work with and feed off each other's creativity. And when they leave, they say, I'm going to miss everyone so much. I've really enjoyed so much. I've learned so much in this process. Dorothy, don't you wish the world were a little more like the Great British Bake Off?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the material world. You know, we get so hung up on it, Dorothy, just to come back after that. Because, you know, it's like, I want the 10 grand or the $4 million. And you notice on reality shows, it becomes more and more money. So we get even more and more competitive. What a shame. Yeah.
Well, I think that's wonderful. I've never seen the show, but it certainly sounds like it's wonderful. It reminds me of the whole concept of the personal best in sports competition, you know, where you are in relation to your personal best.
Growth.
I just wanted to comment on one other aspect, not quite as much fun of competition, but I think it's important. You know, we simplify things into winning and losing. You commented on that. But armed conflict is a really good example of how that simplicity doesn't really capture what's going on. We have a number of armed conflicts around the world where reports indicate that up to 70% of the victims are non-combatants, civilians.
That's not a part of the game, right?
That's right. That's right. They didn't choose to be in it. You know, they didn't sign up for it. There are a wide range of ways in which they are harmed, and all of that just gets lost in what's really happening.
A number of points you just made, and this will lead beautifully into next week's show, which is about bigotry. Again, another subject which can really, you know, be difficult to confront and to talk, but that you said armed conflict. You know, it really comes down to the shame of us ever creating the gun, you know, that that somebody can have that much power over another, that you can render somebody powerless in their choice to participate or not. You know, you could choose to not participate, but when a bullet, you know, goes through your flesh because you are in its way, you are participating. So once again, this idea of we are interconnected, we are in this together. And so if that means a life where bullets are flying around you, or two sides are on either side of you, and you are trapped within a duel, if you will, it's a part of your life. What do you do? Mm-hmm. What do you
right.
do in that situation?
Well, recent headlines are talking about now the guns that can be 3D printed.
Oh, Dorothy. So that just gave me chills.
Yes, I know. Well, I want to touch on one other thing before we have to end this week, because I think it's important, and I want to also talk a bit about, how we balance off. But we've mentioned before that in many ways we are shaped by Newtonian mechanics, the assumptions there. And it really drives this whole myth of duality. And so I just wanted to touch on this a moment, Steve. The, you know, Newtonian mechanics says, or Newtonian physics says, you know, materialism is it. You know, if you can't see it, touch it, feel it, it doesn't matter. And in fact, some people put that as what matters is matter. But we know that the universe is energy, that is its predominant nature. Another principle, so to speak, of Newtonian physics is reductionism, that any complex system can be understood by examining its parts, which overlooks the interactions, the dynamic change, the continuum that we were talking about at the beginning of the of this hour.
Well, Dorothy, just to jump in, it also overlooks that it's impossibility.
That's right.
You keep examining something's parts, and you will have to go smaller and smaller until you realize that that process will never end. You can always go smaller, which shows that it is a continuum. And hopefully that would generate a sense of curiosity and wonder and take you right back to where we were talking about. No fun.
Another one is determinism. This is that whole cause and effect versus what we talked about last month, that time is not linear, that our world is probabilistic, not cause and effect.
Yeah.
And then finally, which relates back to a month ago, objectivity, that events, Newton believed that events and objects are external to and independent of the observer. And certainly when I was originally taught research methods, the whole idea was, you know, as the researcher, you have to be completely separate from what it is that you're observing, which is silly. You can't actually do that. Because our energy participates in whatever it is that we are observing, and that's how we can understand that we do create reality. So these are all dualistic concepts that are, you know, still, I think, quite firmly embedded in the way in which we talk and think about ourselves and each other. And unless we become conscious of them and question them and change them, we will still be vulnerable to that us-them dynamic that we're going to really dig into next week.
Yeah, and you can just hear it, how liberating it all is when we come to this realization of the expansive nature of our universe and the mystery of it all, that it's all a mystery for us to explore, you know? Is that we'll never have the answers, I don't believe. I mean, but so beautiful when you talk about this idea of independent of the observer, that as a researcher, you only look at what it is you're researching. But of course, everybody is unique, and we are going to approach even our research and what we put into that research in a different way. And that's even looking aside the fact that we are energy, and our energy as the observer is totally affecting the way that the results will play out in every way, as quantum science has shown us. So it's very liberating, you know, and actually it's quite hopeful to realize that we are learning that this just isn't so. But how do we get this into the minds of the dualistic thinkers, Dorothy?
Well, that's part of the challenge we're going to be dealing with all month, right, Steve?
Yes. And so, Dorothy,
and the first step is awareness.
Totally. I love that word. We're out of time, Dorothy. So, you know, we're going to for sure this month talk about ways to balance this out and ways to live non-dualistically. So certainly that will come, but please join us next week. We're going to have a very interesting and enlightening discussion about addressing bigotry. So I hope you'll join us. Dorothy, it's been a wonderful start. I'm really looking forward to this whole month.
Me too.
All right, listeners, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.